Hello, I'm Michael Tiedemann. I'm an abolitionist vegan from the United States. You can find me at avoiceforanimals.blogspot.com. That's avoice4animals.blogspot.com. And you're listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Vegetarian.
Vegan.
Yeah,
let's get it right.
You used the word animals, but I suppose what you should have said is non-human animals. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself, then make a
change. Hello and welcome to another episode of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals. This episode I'd like to cover three main topics: the pollution of New Zealand by dairy farmers, dairy-free ice cream, and my appearance on the radio show Animal Rights and Wrongs. Like many billions of people around the world, I'm glad Roger Yates has resumed podcasting. You can find his great show, On Human-Non-Human Relations, at human-nonhuman.blogspot.com. New Zealand relies on two industries, Animal Killing Inc. and New Zealand, it's only a convenient 20-hour flight from the developed nations, Tourism Co. The two often cancel each other out. Not many people come here to see other animals killed. Not many people like buying products that destroy beautiful parts of the world. I'll fit that into my second story, with the cursed palm oil. Is New Zealand really a wonderland of nuclear-free, woman having the vote, chicken-friendly? Well, don't trust my completely honest opinion, because my gravity production machine isn't running at full capacity. I'm stuck here in my Velcro underwear. I can't podcast floating around the ceiling, you know. No, someone who's lived his whole life in the area is sketchy. Instead, trust this clip from our mainstream media.
We begin with a very important question indeed. Are we 100% pure? We tell the world we are for over a decade now. Ads like this have been taking the 100% pure campaign to the industrialised world of Europe, America and Asia. Clean, green, pristine. Come to New Zealand, 100% pure New Zealand. And what a successful campaign it has been. But is it true? Are we? Is the Manawatu River, for example, 100% pure? We all know it's not even close. But the rest of the world appears to have not been that interested in such details until, well, roughly a fortnight ago, Wednesday, May 11th, when John Key appeared on BBC World.
And your advertising slogan, yeah, I think, was all about this, about the 100% pure New, yeah, Zealand, the idea that you're a greener nation, yeah, than any other in the developed world. That already isn't true, as your population does slowly rise.
To over 4 million?
And it's going to get worse. Dr. Mike Joy of Massey University, a leading environmental scientist in your country, said just the other day, he said, we are delusional about how clean and green we are.
Well, that might be Mike Joy's view, but I don't share that view.
But he is very well qualified, isn't he? And he's looked, for example, at the number of species threatened with extinction in New Zealand. He's looked at the fact that half your lakes, 90% of your lowland rivers are now classed as polluted.
Well, look, I'd hate to get into a flaming row with one of our academics, but he's offering his view. I think any person that goes down to New Zealand...
He's a scientist. It's based on research. It's not just an opinion.
He's one academic, and like lawyers, I could provide you another one that would give you a counter view.
Yeah, shut up with that science business already. Hey, this guy's anti-Zealand. Boo! Stop picking on us. You tell him, Prime Minister.
If anybody goes down to New Zealand and looks at our environmental credentials and looks at New Zealand, then for the most part, I think in comparison with the rest of the world, we are 100% pure. In other words, our air quality is...
Hey, stop laughing.
Very high.
100%. 100% is 100%, and yeah, clearly you're not 100%. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, whether you agree with Mike Joy's figures or not, you've clearly got problems of river pollution, you've clearly got problems with species which are declining, threatened with extinction, and he says the problem is that central government, he's not just blaming, yeah, you, but over decades, central government in New Zealand has been complacent about this. So what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, so I don't actually totally agree with that proposition. I mean, for a start off, yes, of course the population is getting larger and that creates some form of pollution. And yes, we have a large agricultural base, and so as we've become intensifying our dairying operations, that's had some impact on our river quality.
Yeah, exactly. It's not pollution, making many of our beautiful rivers unfit for swimming. It's just a nice, politically correct, some impact on our river quality. Exactly, Prime Minister.
Now, what the government has been doing is demanding much higher environmental standards. So actually, for the most part, you jump in any New Zealand river or stream, you go and breathe the air, and you walk up a mountain.
Because just like the other two examples of daily activity, that's what we often do in New Zealand, walk up mountains. Just like all Americans jump the Grand Canyon on their skateboards, right?
I'd argue with you that if you don't believe it's clean and green, then you need to show me a country that's cleaner and greener.
Well, I hope someday I can have the opportunity to do at least some of that. It sounds attractive.
John Key talking to Stephen Sacker on BBC World, 100% pure. We wanted to investigate further, so we chose an area where old New Zealand, remote, unspoiled and even, yes, pure, was coming into contact with new New Zealand, intensive dairy farming. We picked the Waituna Lagoon in Southland's globally renowned Awarua wetlands.
Wait a minute, the globally renowned Awarua wetlands? You mean Awarua, about 16.8 kilometres from my house, where I used to kayak? Where I recently found a few geocaches, and where we have our huge aluminium smelter, and all those slaughterhouses and factories that cut up marine life, oysters, lobsters, fish. Oh, and where that top secret, wink wink, pig operation is, keeping the Auckland Island pigs alive in concrete cells, so they can be killed for a particular organ, never going outside, so they stay disease-free, never seeing the daylight or walking on grass. For xenotransplantation into diabetes sufferers? You mean that Awarua? It's nothing special. Globally renowned, okay, whatever you say, Mr. Campbell.
Indeed, it's so renowned that in 1971 it was declared, and I quote, a wetland of international significance at an intergovernmental meeting in Iran. New Zealand signed a treaty promising to protect it, and today, 40 years on, scientists say it's dying. Jendi Harper in what used to be 100% pure New Zealand.
He's a fish and game officer wanting to protect a rare resource.
I'd like to mention, fish and game are about regulating the killing of other animals, killing fish and game animals, because herding and killing others is a sport, you know. They are absolutely not regulating in any sense of, well, okay, we don't want you to do this, but maybe if you do it a little nicer, eventually we'll stop doing it full stop. No, it's all about, hey, don't kill all the babies because we need them to grow more game tokens so we can win the game, you know, by killing them.
She runs the regional council and this environmental emergency is in her patch. And he's Tangata Whenua, here on behalf of his iwi to save a wetlands it has used for hundreds of years. And when all three talk about Waituna, there is a word they use in common.
If it flips, it will be irreversible.
Our scientists are saying it's in danger of flipping.
We're concerned that this one here might go the same way and flip.
Flip, flips, flipping is not a good thing way down here on the windswept Southland coast.
About 16.8 kilometres away from my house.
What it means is that Waituna Lagoon, 3,500 hectares in size and part of the Awarua wetlands, is on the verge of collapse.
The whole thing dies, basically. All the trout and other native fish that live in there, all the invertebrates, all the insects, and a host of other species would die as a consequence.
And to become turbid and yucky. It's a nice word for it, yucky. And that's what it might become.
Scientists say algal growth will shut out light to the large vital plants on the bottom, and the delicate ecosystem will shut down. And they warn that once this lagoon is lost, it can never be returned to a pristine state.
Certainly can't get it back. It's irreversible. It's like losing a species, really, like kakapo dying out or something.
Zane Moss says this lagoon was relatively healthy up until a decade ago. I ask him if this decline could be a natural phenomenon.
Like climate change.
But he says no. Water testing indicates it is being overrun with nutrients.
Shit.
Mainly from effluent.
Shit.
Cows graze just metres from the lagoon edge on reclaimed wetlands.
This is the main tributary for Waituna. This is Waituna stream itself.
And just up the road, cows defecate and urinate into surface water that flows into the lagoon's main tributary.
And straight into the lagoon from there, so more nutrients, and when we're trying to cut down the amount of nutrient getting in there, obviously that's not going to happen with access like that to that surface water.
He doesn't think this heavy land was ever suitable for dairy farming in the first place. So who let the cows in? Well, that would be the body now headed by Ali Timms, Environment Southland.
Yeah, I think, you know, we need to accept some responsibility there.
In just the last 10 years, 13 more dairy farms have swung into operation in the Waituna catchment alone. In the whole of Southland, there were just 50,000 cows in 1992. In 8 years, that figure climbed to 170,000, and today it stands at just over 458,000.
Do you think there's too many dairy farms in Southland?
Yes, yes. Yes, yes.
That's a good question.
Yes,
I think that people have come into this area.
Yes, yes.
And converted to dairying because it's inexpensive.
Yes.
It's cheaper land, so it's an entry-level area. They can make some money down here short-term, but that's having a real effect on the environment. So I think people need to think about the way that they're farming down here. Perhaps you don't winter stock on Swedes. Perhaps they should be having wintering barns, those sorts of things.
The question was, do you think there's too many dairy farms in Southland? Oh, well, maybe we could do it a bit better. Oh, you know, it'll be, maybe if we do this, it'll be okay, but maybe it's really cheap and that makes it good and a good investment and a good way to start business and we love local business and, yeah, we can do it good. We're always trying to be better. Great answer.
It's the speed of the demise which has caught everyone off guard.
I'm not satisfied that the Waituna Lagoon has been managed up to the standards that I would expect. The Regional Council, Environment Southland, has been too slow in putting in place the sort of controls that would protect this pretty special lagoon.
And we've been aware that there's been some declining water quality down here, but we've really just been caught on the hop with the ramping up of all the really steep decline that's happened in the last couple of years.
Your Environment Southland, shouldn't you be above the local industry, the small businesses? Isn't that a bit like the nuclear industry polluting the place and the Environmental Protection Agency going, oh gee, they really make a lot of pollution, these nuclear power plant things, when they dump toxic waste in playgrounds?
Nick Smith is coming to Waituna in July. Ali Timms says he should bring his checkbook. The cleanup could cost millions. And she's calling on industry, Fonterra, to help out too. Elected as chairperson just 6 months ago, Ali Timms doesn't want to lose a whole lagoon on her watch. And not just any lagoon. Waituna is a Ramsar site, internationally recognised. There's a fear that if it flips, it could attract international attention.
It may not influence you and I personally, the loss of Waituna as such, but it certainly doesn't help our branding internationally.
Who cares about the country? We can't let it go down to 99% pure in New Zealand. It's all image, isn't it?
We want our children to be able to come to these places and view them the way that their ancestors seen them, and then gather eels, ducks, and you know, all those sort of mahinga kai or wild foods that they've always had the opportunity to do.
What are we going to lose if we lose Waituna?
A unique wetland. It's internationally recognised. It's probably unique to New Zealand. And once it's gone, we can't get it back.
Judy Harper was the reporter from the Deep South. Well,
or in other words, about 16.8 kilometres away from my house.
To respond to all of this on behalf of dairy farmers is Dairy New Zealand CEO Tim Mackle, who joins us now live from Hamilton, where you're based. Tim, can you hear me all right?
I can, John. Thank
Excellent.
You.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's times like this I wish I had a video show. I'm going to link to the video in show notes, but this guy, he's standing in front of some servers trying to look all high-tech at this dairy New Zealand place, and he does this, he's got this straight face, and it's just like, yeah, I'm really glad to be here. And every now and then he's like, ha, big smile. It's like he's on some kind of drug to pull the smile off. It's so fake. It's the most false smile you can imagine.
I've got here an article from the Southland Times dated 18th of May. I just read the top of it. Almost half the dairy farms inspected by Environment Southland this month, May, have been found to be seriously breaching effluent consents. Is that good enough?
No, it's not good enough. And we do think it's unacceptable. And frankly, we don't quite understand what's behind those results. However, we've got a lot of work underway, a huge amount of effort going in to help farmers. And it's got to be recognised that a lot of farmers are doing a lot of good work around effluent.
Sure, just like some nuclear radioactive waste places, they're doing a good job on nuclear waste by not dumping it in playgrounds. They just dump it in a, I don't know, mountain somewhere. Wouldn't it be better not to make all this waste in the first place?
There's certain farms as well we need to give a lot more help to, and so it's unacceptable, and we're doing some stuff about that.
I want to read on that article. 54 farms inspected, 24 were found to be so seriously in breach of their effluent discharge consents that they've been rated at the top of Environment Southland's pollution scale. Now, you are right, there are a lot of farmers doing very good work, but those ones who are clearly not, what needs to be done there?
Well, we've been doing a lot of work with regional councils nationally, and I have to say that on a national scale, we're pleased with what we're seeing so far for the current year. It looks like significant non-compliance is dropping from somewhere around 16% down to 11%. That's the early indication. So overall, that's a good improvement. And we've been doing initiatives like compliance checklists, which actually lay out what farmers have to adhere to. And they've been signed off by eight regional councils of major dairying areas so far. It gives confidence to farmers that they know that what they need to adhere to, and it gives confidence to the regional authorities that they have communicated what's important, so the goalposts are set down and we can get on and move. So I think overall those sorts of initiatives are going to be key, and the rules are the rules, and if farmers don't comply then there will be consequences. But
there never are.
We have some more clarity now across the nation on what's important.
Okay, Tim, can I come back to you? How much clarity do you need exactly? You used the figure then 11% significant non-compliance. If my maths is right, that's about one farm in nine. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is, but you've got to understand it's quite a complex issue, John, in terms of what is significant non-compliance and unacceptable effluent going into creeks. And the pictures they're upsetting, and I'm sure a lot of the farmers in the Waituna area aren't happy either. I mean, I know that there's a sense of pride in that important water body for Southland and for the whole country from farmers, many of them fish there. So
yeah, they don't want their day job polluting the place because then they can't kill other animals during their spare time.
I don't know the details behind what you just showed, but we're here to talk about the Waituna, and I think the important thing from our perspective is we do acknowledge the concern that Environment Southland, that locally we have. I'm actually heading down there tomorrow, as it were, to meet with Chairwoman Ali Timms and her council to talk about the Waituna and other issues.
Tim, do people like you and Ali, when you talk, do you have now to discuss getting tougher on farmers who are significantly in breach of what is required of them? Is it time really to get tough on these guys?
I think there are two issues here, John, we're talking about. We're talking about effluent non-compliance.
Dumping shit in internationally renowned wetlands.
It's an issue we just have to fix. We're putting a lot of effort into it. And yes, we are engaging not only with the council, but with farmers. Farmers are getting involved in this too and taking a proactive approach. The other issue is the Waituna itself, and I'm not convinced that effluent itself is an issue behind any concerns around the Waituna.
Hey, maybe climate change is natural, and evolution, that's just a theory.
We've got a big science program underway now with University of Otago, Environment Southland scientists, our own scientists engaged there, to look at what the underlying causes are for concern with the Waituna. It's going to take some time. And then we need to understand what the solutions are and get farmers engaged. You know, in other parts of the country...
A lot of this makes absolute sense. It just, in terms of getting farmers engaged, shouldn't they be engaged by now? Goodness gracious, the Green Party, for example, has been saying this stuff for years. How long will it take before you can do much better than 11% significant non-compliance? How long will it take until across the board farmers are engaged?
I think we're going to see some big improvements because, as I said, we've actually got our act together. We know that we've got capability to help farmers now. We've got clarity as to what's important, and we have tools and we have engineers to do the right thing. Farmers are spending lots of money. Some are spending hundreds of thousands on their systems to get them right. But again, getting back to the Waituna, I'm not convinced it's effluent. I don't think Environment Southland are. I'll be talking to them tomorrow. And so we need to understand what are the issues that are causing concern around that important water body and what are the solutions, and get farmers to buy into that, because in other parts of the country, Aotearoa catchment and Tasman, for example, Golden Bay, we've also had Lake Rotorua, farmers there understand the issues, they understand how they can be part of the solution.
Well, that's bloody marvellous, because they're 100% of the problem. So yeah, as long as they can be part of the solution, and you know, the taxpayer will foot the rest of it.
And that it's been a tremendous response from them and from the community working together. You know, we need to take a similar approach, but we need the facts, we need the science. And fortunately, there's a good group of people onto that now.
Dr. Tim Mackle, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Tim Mackle from Dairy New Zealand. In fact, he's the CEO.
We use the term cash cow for a reason, because there's lots of money to be had forcibly impregnating slave females, killing their useless male children, enslaving the females, all to keep mother's milk flowing as long as possible, until she hits a certain age, gets too old, aka when she produces 2% less breast milk than the previous pregnancy, and has to be killed. There's money to be made from all this, and farmers, well, they're just going to keep milking it. I really think this story shows how we need to keep spokesholes honest. Don't let them get away with talking cow effluent. It's bloody cheap to make promises on national TV. Oh well, we at X take this issue very seriously. Although we're not sure it's our fault, maybe someone else is dumping all that dairy nutrient in world-renowned wetlands 16.8 kilometres away from vegan Jordan Wyatt's house. I should be clear, Arua Bay is about 16.8 kilometres away from my house. I'm using the geocaching app on my iPhone to show me a cache I found there. That particular glass jar, hidden in a shrub, is 16.8 kilometres away from my house. I've seen other distances that the Waituna Lagoon itself, part of the bay, is about 40 kilometres away from Invercargill. As animal rights activists, I don't think we should allow animal agriculture to get away with such non-answers to straightforward questions, which could be answered with a yes or no. Do you, the head of Environment Southland, a government organisation in charge of conservation, think there are too many dairy farms here in Southland, around our protected areas, which are being polluted by waste from these industries? With a non-answer of, well, I think we could always do better, and we are planning to do better, and perhaps they could keep these animals away from their free-range paddocks, around beautiful lagoons where we go to kill other animals, and they could instead be kept inside facilities, which stops them pooping outside, because we keep animals inside buildings. Don't put up with their politically correct spin. Call them out on this behaviour, on what they say on television, in press releases, and most importantly, on what they do. It's important, it's easy enough, and it's important for non-vegans to understand dairy nutrients means shit, destroying our internationally renowned areas, and it even lets you swear a lot on your podcast. It's a win-win. Environment Southland, the local body in charge of protecting our damn environment, they can't speak out against this awful industry. It's a bloody disgrace. In fact, it's bullshit. I wanted to include some positive news, so I asked Chris Noaro of the Wellington radio show Animal Rights and Wrongs to join me to talk about, well, vegan ice cream. Why not? Well, maybe because it has palm oil in it. And joining me right now, I have Chris Noaro of the Animal Rights and Wrongs show, and Chris mentioned being an ice cream connoisseur.
I had been a big dairy consumer in terms of milk and ice cream. I loved ice cream.
Have you tried the So Good brand?
Yes, I do eat it, fair amount. It's delicious. It's absolutely fantastic.
What's your favourite of the two flavours? We have two here in Invercargill, at least.
The chocolate.
It's quite interesting. One of our supermarkets, one of our new worlds, it only has a vanilla, and the other one only has chocolate, so you sort of have to travel to get either or. I've mostly had the vanilla, and I vouch for it as well. It's great, and I would think it's some of the best ice cream I've ever had in my life, and it's soy ice cream, although I might be biased because of being a vegan advocate, and it's been a while since I've had non-vegan ice cream. So I guess alternatives sort of arise when we need them, huh?
It sounds like we're both connoisseurs of ice cream, I know.
So that's two thumbs up.
Yeah, so it's not just, it's not just because it's I'm vegan and I want to like it. I knew what good ice cream was, and I can see no problem with it whatsoever. I think it's at least as good as the taste of the dairy stuff.
And I thought it'd be interesting to have Chris join me to talk about ice cream, because I've been really excited to find a vegan ice cream on my shelves. How are you, Chris?
Good, Jordan. Yeah, I'm really pleased you asked me.
Well, I think vegan ice cream is a very important thing for New Zealanders, because living here, we have, for example, our Christmas is summertime for us, and I see it as an image to have ice cream at Christmas time on the beach in the summer, and we have a lot of big brands that they advertise on that. It's a Kiwi thing, it's a New Zealand thing to have ice cream in summer and in the outdoors, and just having such a large dairy industry, I do think that we would have quite a high ice cream consumption around the world. Per capita, I think New Zealand will be right up there. And so to find a good vegan ice cream thing, I think it's really important. Don't you, Chris?
Yeah, it was really important for me. because I absolutely loved ice cream before I went vegan.
So yeah. Did I. It's a bit weird to think that I used to have it quite often. I mean, probably once a week. And then when I went vegan for quite a while, I never had ice cream. I don't think I missed it, and it certainly wasn't like a deal breaker. I don't really want to be hurting mother cows and other animals, you know, for their animal milk. But it is a weird thing to think about not having ice cream for a while when you've grown up with it. So the brand I found was So Good, and So Good is owned by Sanitarium, and So Good, and they have vanilla and chocolate. What was the first vegan ice cream you found, Chris?
I think the first one I tried is the one that I'm still sticking with, and that's Light Licks.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
and chocolate's my favourite. It's a really beautiful ice cream.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I just recently discovered this Light Licks brand too, and I noticed it at our Pack and Save and at our New World supermarkets here, and I've taken pictures of it, and it's on the Invercargill Vegan Society website. I'm trying to label the products around here that are vegan that I like and I think are quite quirky. I guess it's not the healthiest food to be bringing up ice cream, but I think it's a fun and positive one for non-vegans to see when they go to they might not have heard of veganism before. And when they go to a page like this, they can see that, oh, that ice cream at Pack and Save, the supermarket I go to, opposite the Civic Theatre on Tay Street in Invercargill, I can pick up vegan ice cream there. And maybe it doesn't sound like such a weird thing. It's not all hemp and yoga and chanting and lentils. We have ice cream.
Yeah, I think it's really important to be able to show people that, because I think that some of the people I've met recently, you find a large percentage of people know what veganism is, and they've heard of vegans. But when you show them ice cream, that's just something that's really important. You know, they know that if they were to consider being vegan, that they wouldn't have to give up something like ice cream.
Well, I think ice cream is important for all New Zealanders, but in Southland we have a well-known brand called Deep South, and they win a lot of awards. And it's a terrible little location for their factory. It's located pretty much on the same block as a slaughterhouse. It's just for chickens, it's just a few doors down, next to a crematorium in the cemetery too. But apparently they make some of the best ice cream, non-vegan ice cream, in the country. And so I think that it really is important that we have a great range of vegan ice creams out here, if people have grown up having ice cream a lot. And so it was exciting for me to see this Light Licks brand. And at our local supermarkets here in Invercargill, I've seen a few flavours of it. They have chocolate ripple, vanilla, hokey pokey, and berry fruit. Which ones have you had, Chris?
I've tried the first three. I haven't tried the berry fruit yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. So what did you think of each of them? What did you think of the chocolate one?
I'd say the chocolate's the best. It's really got a lot of nice chocolatey syrup. I would never be able to tell it apart from an ordinary dairy ice cream. And I still think, maybe I'm not the ultimate connoisseur. Maybe someone would be able to tell the difference, but I do. I used to love my ice cream, and the fact that I now eat this is just great. There's no difference, you know.
I agree. Have you had the vanilla as well?
I had vanilla, yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was fine, yeah. I think you weren't too keen on the hokey, is that right?
The hokey pokey, yeah. I have to share my first experience with it. It was the first one I saw. And I had the first, I don't know why, but I had the first serving of it, and it was terrible. I don't know if it was something that was just like contamination or something, but there was just a horrible taste at the front, at the top part of it.
Right.
But I've had several more cartons of Light Licks again, and it hasn't been the same. So maybe it's just a one-off.
Yeah.
But I found that the hokey pokey bits were quite sweet for me, but I think the vanilla's quite good. Hokey pokey wouldn't be my favourite of the ones I've had. I probably liked the chocolate quite a lot. And so that you said that was your favourite as well, the chocolate.
It is, yeah. How would So Good compare to Light Licks?
I haven't had So Good. I have to mention that they make vanilla and they make chocolate, and they're only sold at New World, and we have two New Worlds in Invercargill. And the one up north in Invercargill, they sell only chocolate, and the one in south in Invercargill only sells vanilla. So you have to go to the other side of the city to get the different flavours, which is a bit odd.
Yeah.
I haven't had chocolate that often, but I think they're about the same probably. And perhaps we should mention this. Light Licks, they sell themselves as a 1 litre on the website, but it's actually 946 millilitres, so someone's getting ripped off. I'm not sure if So Good is an actual 1 litre, so maybe you're getting that little bit more for your money. I'm not sure. I'd say they're probably about the same. But I was quite interested to see with the Silex brand, they also have two more flavours. They have Hokey Pokey and Berry Fruit. And as the only person here to have had the berry fruit, it's sort of like a boysenberry, and I think it was quite good. I think it's quite fun, and it's quite a, I don't know if it's a, I think they call it something like boysenberry ripple overseas, but I think of New Zealand as being quite a boysenberry sort of flavour. It's quite common here, and so it's good to see more flavours, more variety, and
maybe there'll be more coming.
I hope so. I think it's just really great to see more varieties of ice cream here, and just more vegan options.
Yeah. What about a lime? I really fancy a lime. It used to look like lime ice cream.
I think they have a lot of sorbets and things, and I'm not sure if some of those are vegan, so I might have to look at those. It sounds, it does sound quite good. And I think there's one last thing that we should mention about Lightlix. When you look on their website, it mentions it's one company, and they make quite a few different brands of ice cream. And it mentions, as part of our commitment to producing a quality product, we make light licks at the start of a day's manufacturing. We can assure you that there is no risk of contamination from the dairy-based ice creams we produce. And that kind of puts me off the product, to be honest, that they, on the same equipment, they also make non-vegan ice creams, and they make it sound like they sort of rinse it down at the end of the night, and they make the light licks brand, the vegan brand, they make that at the start of the day, and so it doesn't get contaminated. How do you feel about that, Chris?
I think one amusing thing about that, it's not so good, but is the way they talk about dairy, that they, they don't want to contaminate the non-dairy ice cream with the dairy, which is the way you should talk about dairy, because dairy is a filthy, poisonous product, really. You know, full of cow pus and the queso morphine and the what do they call it, IGF-1, which is the cancer promoter. It's something that you definitely don't want in your body.
I always think it from ethical reasons, and just sort of stealing milk from a mother and killing the children if they're male and enslaving them if they're female. I want nothing to do with that, and it's just disgusting. I mean, I'm 23 years old. I'm weaned by now, as the website says. I think it's quite funny that they'd use the term contamination as well. I think maybe they could say spread or something like that, or carry over or something like that, but contamination is such a strong word. And I'd like to mention on the packaging, I'm looking at one now, it is suitable for anyone avoiding dairy products for health or lifestyle reasons. And I think it's quite nice for them to say it's for health reasons you might not have it, your choice for a healthy life. It doesn't really mention people who can't handle lactose, who are intolerant of it, which I always think is not a very nice term.
And that's the majority of the world's population, by the way.
But surely you want to be tolerant of everyone and everything, but maybe not so much for ethical reasons. But they mentioned for a health lifestyle reason, and as if it's genuinely healthier not to have dairy. And you think, well, why does the company make why do they make non-vegan ice creams then, if they sort of admit that it's a health reason? And I was saying with Chris, perhaps it's sort of like the tobacco companies, and they have to sort of label that it's bad for you or whatever, but they keep selling tobacco because there's money to make in it, even if it's known to be bad for your health. So I'm really hoping that they'll start making just all ice cream will be vegan ice cream in time, as there are more vegans. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So I think Chris and I are both ice cream connoisseurs. We both class ourselves as. We both like ice cream. And we've both been really pleased to find such a great vegan ice cream, and it's available nationwide. Chris, thank you for joining me on my show.
Thanks a lot. It's been great.
I'm really glad Chris joined me to talk about vegan ice cream, although it's kinda not vegan. I blame myself for this. Is the Lightlix brand of ice cream made by Emerald Foods dairy-free, as in no mother's milk from cows inside? Yes. Is it technically vegan? Yes, as in it doesn't have any animal byproducts inside. But it does kinda have one thing, hydrogenated palm kernel oil, which for some reason only stood out in my mind after I'd brought some, after I'd had Chris on for a lovely chat. And I don't think a product containing palm kernel oil, hydrogenated or not, should be brought by vegans. I'll include a link to the world's number one source on facts, Wikipedia, in my show notes. Essentially, palm oil is most often grown in poorer nations, the oil palm, where beautiful forests are cut down, all to make a quick buck. Slashing and burning the world's forests, it's a shame. All for this, bugger the consequences for the environment, for the animals previously living in the forest. Am I being vegan police by not wanting to buy products involving palm oil? I don't think so. I feel very angry at myself for somehow buying products containing it. Was the ice cream good? Yes. Would I recommend it? No. I don't want to recommend products with palm oil inside. I've changed the InfoSoc Vegan Products and Invercargill page to reflect this, mentioning it's not a great product to buy because of the palm oil inside. Is this the end of the world? No. There's still So Good Vanilla at my local New World supermarket, and if I feel like venturing to the other end of Invercargill, well, there's So Good Chocolate soy ice cream there. All are truly vegan, neither contain palm oil. I've sent an email to the maker of Lightlix, Emerald Foods. It was polite, and explained how non-vegan consumers also were upset about palm oil, how Cadbury's, the chocolate maker, got in huge trouble, of how Greenpeace is currently bashing the dairy industry for feeding the slave cows palm kernel extract, or PKE. It's the waste left over from palm oil harvesting, a cheap food for dairy cows, apparently. I think there's a definite link between the dairy industry frigging up New Zealand with all those nutrients, and with palm oil frigging up rainforests overseas. I want to be a part of neither operation. I really hope Lightlix will be made truly vegan, that the palm oil will be removed from future batches. And if not? Well, the Invercargill Vegan Society is proud to promote So Good ice cream, which is palm oil free. Hey Chris, I'm sure you'll enjoy So Good's chocolate ice cream. That's what I'll recommend, that is, until someone explains to me, hey Jordan, Blood of the Innocent isn't vegan, and it compromises 76% of that ice cream you mentioned. Thank you for listening to me this long. As a reward, more of me. Ooh, and this time I'm talking about myself even more. Hooray! I was a guest on the Wellington-based radio show Animal Rights and Wrongs. I listened to the podcast version of the show. One of the hosts, Deborah, asked me to be on, to talk about the Invercargill Vegan Society and Chicken Friends. She had me at Chicken Friends. I disagree with many of the show's welfare reform promoting guests, although I do enjoy some of their comments, and it's fun to mix in popular songs.
To get a Chuck's multi-cloth and spritz it with water, and then you swirl it and swirl it and swirl it like a helicopter in the air.
Is auto-tune really dead?
Take your shirt off! Take your shirt off! Take your shirt off! Take your shirt off!
Just sit in the air like a motherfucking helicopter!
Take your shirt off! Take your shirt off!
Just sit in the air like a motherfucking helicopter!
Swirl it and swirl it and swirl it like a helicopter in the air, and it just freezes it right down. It makes it really cold, and then we used to tuck it in around the hobbits' necks. It was the orcs, around the orcs' necks, because they had those big prosthetic heads on.
Yeah.
And it really, really cooled them down, and I'd taken that idea and do it with the animals. So my dogs have a bandana around their neck. When they look like they're getting hot, I take it off, and I swirl it around in the cold air, and it really chills it, and then you pop it back around the neck again.
Yeah, and that, so I guess anything, what you're saying is anything that kind of might keep you cool, consider it for your animals
most
as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's just all the basics, isn't it? I mean, like an ice block, a wet bandana, shade.
Yeah, exactly.
Plenty of fluids. It's all pretty similar,
yep,
really, isn't it?
And fans and the air conditioning, although that's probably not very green. But, anything like that. And if you need to, if you have a dog that's overheating and you need to cool it down, don't be shy. Chuck it in a river, chuck it in a cold bath of water, just anything you can do to get its body temperature back down again. It can be life-saving.
I, Jordan Wyatt, no means endorse women taking their tops off. Why, you misogynistic, male, chauvinistic pig? You'd all have us wearing burkas. No, no, and hey, what's your speciesism? No, top taking off and swirling in the air here, be it in the form of activism for the animals or otherwise, in my world, we'd all wear matching blue overalls and swig Victory Gin while wearing the red sash of the Junior Anti-Sex League. Also, I believe the guest was using common New Zealand slang, chuck it in a river, as in chuck them, non-human animals. It wasn't meant literally. I liked how Deborah described me on the episode prior to my call-in.
Now, also, what else have we got to report on this week? I think hopefully next week we're going to be having Jordan Wyatt from the Invercargill Cargill, vegan society, on the show. I know that Chris, you've been liaising with Jordan a wee bit, haven't you, on and off? Yeah, I think.
I've known him for quite a long time, ever since I went vegan.
Right, and he's
an emailist and that kind of thing.
He's got a good setup down there in Invercargill for vegans. I'm not sure how many vegans there are in Invercargill, but at least there's a base for people in that sort of area to go.
Yeah, I think if there's any that are getting interested, he'll, you know, get onto it. He's got an amazing, he's got badges and shirts and all sorts of things. Really nice design.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, and he also does podcasts, doesn't he, about hard-hitting vegan issues.
Yeah.
So he's an abolitionist.
He is, yeah.
And so there won't be any mucking around with him. He's straight to the point, and it'll be great to have him as a guest on the show.
I like the idea of being a vegan who promotes veganism as being no mucking around. I know Deborah wasn't being serious or derogatory. I do like the image, though, that veganism is in some way more radical, with vegans who agree with larger cages, etc., being more moderate, and vegans who only want to promote veganism being these supposedly militant jerks. Oh yes, I'll have the pickled pheasant, please, Jeeves, with a smidgen of caviar, and be careful not to spill any on my wife's mink coat. Why, you filthy scum, I ought to give you a beating! You're an animal exploiter, why do you scum? Drop and give me 20! You filthy murderer, you make me sick! I'll let you into a little secret. It wasn't recorded on the Saturday when it was broadcast. The Saturday morning greeting is a lie. I was using a corded telephone, remember those? In the chicken shed, as I called us telephones with some kind of weird buzzing on the line. Or maybe that's how telephones always sound, I'm not sure. So imagine me, sitting in a small building, finding the telephone's cord barely long enough, straw on the ground, chicken poop, sorry, I mean chicken nutrients, on the ground, the sun streaming in the windows, with my chicken friends outside, pretending to be atop the Invesoc Marble Tower, my secretary having just put the phone call through to my executive office.
You are listening to Animal Rights and Wrongs on Wellington Access Radio, 783 AM. Coming up, we speak to Jordan White, creator of the Invercargill Vegan Society.
Now, the visitor information website describes Invercargill as one of the southernmost cities in the world where you can enjoy the real New Zealand. It says it has wide streets, gentle traffic flow and no hustle or bustle. It goes on to say that Invercargill is easy to explore, has something for everyone because the sea and several significant scenic reserves are right on Invercargill's doorstep, where you can enjoy horse riding on a beach, hear native bird song in the bush, and enjoy some of the country's best boutiques and department store shopping all in the same day. Sounds like my kind of town. But there is also another gem that the website forgot to mention, and that is the Invercargill Vegan Society. Many involved with animal rights issues would be familiar with Jordan Wyatt. He's a vegan abolitionist, podcaster and website designer who lives there. Now we thought we'd catch up with Jordan and see what life is like for a vegan in Invercargill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Deborah.
Okay, now you share your views widely on the internet, of course, but do you feel like a lone voice in Invercargill?
Well, it certainly is true. There aren't many vegans in Invercargill at the bottom of the South Island.
How many are there, do you think?
I've only met a couple down here.
Right.
But there's only way to get more vegans down here, and that's by promoting veganism. So that's what I'm aiming to do with the Invercargill Vegan Society, or Invesoc.
Right. So, well, how easy is it to actually live as a vegan in Invercargill?
Well, it can be difficult when a lot of your friends who you grew up with, and they have very non-vegan activities. They talk about going out rabbit hunting and how much fun it is when you shoot rabbits and the tops of their heads pop off and you see their brains inside. And some of them have jobs at dairy farms and the like, and that is very upsetting, but I always stay calm, and if they ask me about how I feel about things, I explain just confidently how I feel it's very wrong to hurt or kill other animals. And I often, when I'm talking about veganism with other people, I use examples of my chicken friends, the little chickens that live here with me. And they're nice little bantams, and I always have lots of photos and videos of them just living their lives and how gentle and calm they are and how it would be wrong to hurt them. So,
what kind of influence
do you think you have on your friends, for example, when they are working in the animal industries and you are talking about animals from a different perspective that they may not have thought about before? Do you think that has any influence on them?
Well, hopefully they can see that all vegans, or greenies as they often call me, hopefully they can see that we're not all weird, that we're not all crazy. They've known me for many years. When I meet the other farmers here, I talk like a Southlander, I belong here. They can see that it's not just for people from elsewhere, that anyone can be vegan, and that anyone can respect other animals and enjoy having friendships with other animals and want to look after them.
Do they? Do you think, though, that when you're speaking your message to them, that you can kind of see them trying to reason with what they're doing and what you're trying to tell them? Are they sort of going, oh, well, maybe, yeah, maybe you've got a point?
I hope they are.
Yeah.
I think just by being, it's sort of like the gorilla in the room, just by being a vegan and people knowing that, it at least makes them think about their own actions. I think it can be very difficult for them if they've grown up doing these activities and on farms and killing other animals and seeing other people, their family, kill other animals from a young age. They can believe that what they're doing is right and just anyone else must be crazy or wrong. But just by being a calm, vegan voice, I think that works quite well, just being rational.
Did you actually grow up on a farm?
I didn't. I grew up on the outskirts of town and surrounded by farmland. It's quite common in Invercargill, and I've got relatives that are dairy farmers, they say now, and others who have grown sheep and killed sheep and other animals, but it's quite common here. I have been on farms before, yes.
So how long ago did you become vegetarian first and then go vegan?
Well, I sort of stumbled upon vegetarianism, and I went basically vegan, but not quite, fairly early on. About the only thing was that I would eat things that had dairy products in them. It seemed to be in everything. I'd never heard of veganism until I basically was vegan when I decided to cut those out. I don't remember seeing it much in Invercargill or hearing it. I'd seen the episode of, say, The Simpsons when Lisa became vegetarian. And there are some movies I'd heard the term vegetarian before, but I'd never heard the term vegan before. So it's only recently. I've only been vegan for about 3 years now.
Right, and how long were you what you'd call vegetarian for?
A couple of years before that,
right.
Vegetarian.
So what was it that made you cut animal or meat products out of your diet at that time when you became vegetarian?
When I thought about flesh, and there were some movies, like The Silence of the Lambs was a movie that stood out to me. When you think about how we treat other animals and that they are certainly ethically no less than we are, the way that movie The Silence of the Lambs talked about killing people and treating them as if they were things, how we call other animals its rather than a he or she, and leather, skin, hide, it's all the same thing, fur. And I guess just as the issues became, as they arose, I just thought about the issues more just from the mainstream media and popular culture, and that's sort of what influenced me to become vegetarian and then vegan as I learnt more about the issues.
And so how did your family react to your views or the changes that you made in your life at that time?
Well, my father worked at a freezing works for about 10 years in Export Slaughterhouse, and so he wasn't too impressed. He thought it was just some kind of affair or something, and I remember him telling me, you can't change the world. Well, I think just by being a sort of positive voice, and as more people meet vegans like ourselves, I think we can be quite good ambassadors for veganism, that we're just normal people. And so they were a little hostile. I think my mother thinks it's a little odd, but I think they've gotten used to it now, and certainly they see that there's nothing wrong with me, that my arms and legs haven't dropped off, as Professor Gary Francione says. You know, it's not like your body changes when you become vegan.
So and I guess they would be familiar with the fact that even though you're in Invercargill and perhaps there's only a few vegans down there, that it is quite a growth kind of movement. There are a lot of people going vegan.
Well, it's great to see it in the mainstream media and things like the Oprah Show, although I didn't like how Miss Kathy Friston talked about being a veganist and things. It's just great to see veganism out there. And so even when they're not around me, they're starting to hear the word vegan more in the last couple of years, which is great, I think.
I actually haven't heard that term, veganist.
Yeah, I think Kathy Preston sort of invented it herself. It's kind of veganish. Oh, yeah, sort of vegan, not quite, but, you know, moving along there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that vegan word, which a lot of people don't really like. Yeah. Vegan, vegetarian, vegan.
Right, right. Well, look, now you've been obviously doing, you know, a lot of stuff on the internet, and you've been doing your podcasting called Coexisting with Non-Human Animals for some time. Tell us a bit about this.
Well, a couple of years ago, I decided to try a podcast. I'd been listening to so many other people who had podcast shows, and they really inspired me. I got a lot of help from Elizabeth Collins, and she has NZ Vegan Podcast, which is a really well-known animal rights podcast around the world. It's really impressive to think what Elizabeth's able to do, how she's got so many listeners, you can see on iTunes. And it made me want to start talking about in my area and to cover issues in Southland and in Invercargill, as well as New Zealand and the world. And, yeah, just for the last couple of years, I've had a small podcast, and it's quite fun.
So who's your target audience with that?
Well, anyone who wants to learn more about veganism and animal rights, and chicken friends especially. I talk about my chicken friends a lot. And I'll mention on news stories. If there's a story in the news on close-up or something, I might post a comment if I've covered that topic on the show. And just anyone who wants to find out more about veganism and animal rights.
Right. And do you think that do you think that people are tuning in and listening and making changes? Have you got any measure of that at all?
I do get emails from people, and mostly I get vegetarians who've decided to be vegan recently, and they say that they like a lot of the shows, like Elizabeth's, and it's great. They like meeting other vegans. And I've been talking with more vegans down here, more vegetarians, sorry, who are interested in veganism, and they found out about my show and things just by doing a Google search about Invercargill and veganism. And it's quite good. It's definitely a growing movement. It's not really going, you know, downhill. It's just all uphill from here.
That's right. And when you say there's not many vegans there, there's, what, a number of vegetarian people there?
Vegetarians, I probably know of at least 10 vegetarians here. There's probably quite a lot more, but I know at least 10. And I know about two other vegans that live here.
Right. Well, I've been on onto your website, Invercargill Vegan Society website, and you've got photographs on there of all the vegan food that you can actually buy at the supermarket down there. Is that right?
Yes, I just thought it would be quite useful to show that there's vegan food at New World and Pack and Save, and a lot of people I know I hadn't had tofu or falafel before, and it's good to point it out. And the soy milk and the soy ice cream, they can see that vegans do have things like ice cream.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because when you're saying you don't think there's too many vegans there, and yet the shops are certainly stocking the products down there, so I guess that's a good sign of the times.
Yes, just being a national chain, and it's great to think that you can get vegan food anywhere, and special sort of vegan products, or, you know, for lactose intolerant people as well, for the soy milks and oat milks and ice milks, and I think it's really great. It shows how far we've come along. I hear from other vegans that we didn't have all these options just a few years ago.
That's right. So do you think that growth is happening fast enough in this country then? Do you think that people are becoming aware of animal rights issues and that they are taking it on board and making those changes in their lives?
Well, it'll never be fast enough until we can sort of snap our fingers and there's a vegan world overnight. I do think people are really learning more about veganism because, I mean, I've only been vegan a few years and I'd never heard of it, and now it seems everyone in my immediate family has heard of it through television, or they know that I like talking about my chicken friends and talking about veganism. And, yeah, I do think this seems to be happening worldwide. It just seems to be getting a lot more coverage now.
Well, what else do you think needs to happen to speed up the process?
Well, definitely some kind of vegan ray that sort of you point at people and it turns them vegan. But I think just more promotion of veganism and people get used to it, and you'll see vegan options on menus. Veganism in the mainstream media and on television, and hopefully their shows will be covered on close-up and such programs.
Well, what about campaign strategy by some of the animal advocacy groups? Do you feel like enough is being done by those groups to create this change and to speed it up?
Well, I do hope that more of the large groups here and worldwide will focus on veganism more. I wish that we wouldn't have welfare reform sort of orientated single issue campaigns, and just to promote veganism and respect for all animals. I think that would definitely help. I think it would be a far less confusing message for people that there's sort of the bad farming and the good farming, and then veganism's really radical.
Do you think that would scare people off though, given that a lot of people who
become vegan were quite often vegetarian first, and then they kind of moved along as they became more familiar with the issues. Do you think, you know, I mean, I personally don't know of a lot of people that became vegan overnight and recognised all of the issues in a hurry and said, right, bang, that's it, I'm going vegan. So do you think that the welfare strategy does play its part?
No, I personally think I would have been vegan pretty much immediately. I can't say, of course, but I just think by vegans promoting veganism, it's a clear message and it's simple to understand. I think maybe it's a lot simpler to understand that we don't treat dogs differently than we treat cats or whales or pigs or chickens. I just think if we treat them all with equal respect, if we just do promote veganism, the people that are interested, they'll listen to us. The people who aren't interested, well, they're not going to be interested, I guess, and they'll change over time. I think there are a lot of people interested in veganism right now, though, and it's great to see more vegans around.
But I suppose even on saying that, you'd have a lot of faith in the human race in New Zealand that they would be confident enough to dive straight into veganism, whereas a lot of people would say, well, no, most people are prepared to cut out a little bit of meat, and a lot of people do that one or two nights a week in their homes, but to dive straight in and become vegan overnight almost seems like a bit of an impossible task, you know, at this stage. Maybe in 10 years' time, you know, will it be easier? I don't know. Will the message be a bit more simpler, or will they receive it in an easier way?
Well, I find it kind of interesting, really, when you think about some people that say they find vegetarianism, which they tend to mean not eating animal flesh, is being a lot easier than being vegan, and that vegan is somehow magically harder. And if anything, I think it would be the other way around. When I think about not wearing certain products made out of skin, I think that would be relatively easy to cut out. And maybe things, when we talk about having meat, how we kill and eat chickens and pigs and cows, I think that's much more prevalent. I never really felt like, oh, I couldn't live without drinking, breast milk in a 2-litre bottle or eggs. I'd find those a lot easier to cut out. And I think that people can see that all these sort of products are about equal on the sort of suffering scale, however we want to sort of rate that.
So do you think it's about the way that these things are being marketed? I mean, when you think about it, I think a lot of animal rights people are out there doing all the work for the companies that are producing vegan food. It's not the free-range farmers even that are standing out there saying don't eat eggs or, you know, only buy free-range eggs. It's all the animal rights campaigners that are actually standing around telling people that this is wrong. And I'm just wondering how much responsibility some of these companies need to be taking for saying we are cruelty-free.
Well, I mean, I was just looking with friends last night about looking at more vegan companies and companies that do not test on animals, and I'm hoping that more of those will be vegan, like Lush, which we don't have in Invercargill. I wish we did. How they have a lot of non-vegan products, which is quite sad, and I just think by being more vegans, promoting veganism, there'll be more of a market for it and more demand, supply and demand.
Right, yeah. But I suppose, just going back to what animal advocates are doing, they are the ones that are telling everybody that we're, I guess, all working incredibly hard trying to convince family and friends that they should make those changes, when in actual fact the companies are capitalising on the work that we're doing, I guess, to introduce people into vegan sausages or vegetarian patties or whatever it is, and I'm not really sure how much responsibility these companies should be taking by saying, hey, come along and join us and eat our vegan food and join the revolution, I guess. Yeah, but anyway, that probably is not necessarily a question for you to answer, but perhaps a question for some of those companies to be answering and to be considering. So who do you think then are the best advocates for veganism in New Zealand at the moment?
Well, I've always been inspired by Elizabeth Collins. She sort of got me interested in podcasting, and you can find her at edzveganpodcast.blogspot.com.
Where's she based?
She's in Auckland.
Right.
And she has a few friends that help her out, and they have a stall with her friend William Paul, and he's a great person, and they get out there on the streets of Auckland most weekends with a table, and they have a lot of vegan literature that people can take, and they talk about veganism. And I think it's great, and they've started handing out cupcakes that they make as sort of a sample of vegan food, that it's not all tofu and lentils and wearing hemp, just weird things, radical things, being crazy greenies. They get out there and promote veganism as easy and as fun. And I also like Emmy James. She's doing a lot of great things in Hamilton. And she's always helped me with my design issues, since I'm terrible at designing things on my computer. T-shirts and things, and it's fun to wear things that you know your friends have made all throughout the country. It's great.
So if someone was listening to the show now and they were thinking, well, you know, what's all this sort of veganism thing, what would you say to them they should be considering, or what would you say they should go and look at to consider their options and to really question the way that they're living their lives right now?
Well, I think it's great with the internet that we can get so many resources from around the world. And one of my favourite websites is Gary Francione's Abolitionist Approach site, and that's abolitionistapproach.com. And it has a lot of pamphlets and videos, slides. It has a podcast. It has links to other shows and other websites. And places like that are great. I think websites and blogs help a lot. I quite like the recipe sites as well. And podcasts, I think, are quite useful. And I'm starting to get into pamphlets myself as well, having pamphlets to hand people. But for people who are interested in veganism around the world, I think the internet can't be beat. Just all the different podcasts to listen to and watch, and the websites.
And the challenge really is to get people to even take the time out to go and investigate this, isn't it, in the first place?
Yeah, I think if we focus on promoting this easy, I think it's, I know it's a bit difficult, say, to tell people to go to my site over the phone, say, because currently I have quite a long website, like coexist.co.nz or coexisting.co.nz, and that's quite easy to remember, I think. It doesn't take too long to type it. So I just hope is, yeah, just promoting it in simple URLs, which is something I have to work on, coexisting with non-human animals. More people will take their 2 seconds out of their life and to type it in and see what it's about.
Yeah, that sounds great. All right, look, thanks for that. I think you've given us a lot of information and our listeners a lot of information about what it's like to be vegan in a smaller town. So there's no excuses out there for people if they're dedicated enough to want to make that change in their life, is there?
No, there's not. It's as easy to be vegan as not, and even if you live in Invercargill.
That's great. All right, thanks very much, Jordan.
Thank you for having me on, Deborah.
Thank you. And that was Jordan Wyatt from the Invercargill Vegan Society. Now, if you'd like to check out Jordan's website, it's www.invsoc.org.nz, and that's INVSOC. And I think there's some links there to his podcasting as well. So check that out. A very forward-thinking young man, and I like him. I think he's pretty good, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah.
Now we're going to take another break and hear a song chosen by Jordan called Man in the Mirror by the late Michael Jackson. Jordan chose this song because he said it was about taking personal responsibility and looking after you, looking at yourself in the mirror.
Hey, that music sounds familiar. I've just gotten a nail gun at work to complement the table saw, angle grinder, and testicle level bench vise. I'm extra careful when I slam it shut. I'm glad I wasn't listening to that ending while at work. And according to Jordan Wyatt, veganism is about looking at yourself in the mirror. That would have been too funny. And I would have ended up with either a finger nailed to a workbench, a finger ground off, a hand cut off, or, every man's worst fear, 2 exploded testicles. Slamming that vice would be like taking a sledgehammer to an orange.
Looking at yourself in the mirror.
I'd like to thank Deborah, Chris and Eric for letting me be on their radio show to talk about Chicken Friends and myself. And thank you for listening to myself talking about myself for even longer than usual. Thank you for listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals, and Jordan Wyatt, apparently. You can find the script for this episode, as well as downloads for every episode of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals at coexistingwithnonhumananimals.co.nz. If you'd like to contact me, even just to say you've listened and are sick of hearing me talk about myself, send an email to jwontdart@gmail.com, or on Twitter, or on Facebook, JAYWONTDART, or Jordan Wyatt, WYATT. I'd appreciate it. Thank you for listening.
Away from the notion of animals as things and toward the moral personhood of animals. The choice is ours. If you're not vegan, go vegan. It's easy. It's better for you. It's certainly better for the planet. and most importantly, it's the morally right thing to do.